Duncan again and to be here with you. And we've got communion this morning, so we'll make sure we have time for that. And I'm looking forward to speaking, like Peter said, on the topic of God finding what was lost. The story, he used some parables about being lost and being found. And I hope that we can find ourselves in this parable this morning. I'm sure we can. Have you ever lost something that's very important for you, to you? You might be able to think of that. I hope this doesn't bring up some angst internally, just thinking about it. How about a cell phone? Have you ever lost your cell phone? How many of you have misplaced your cell phone? Okay, be honest. I should see almost every hand, I'm sure, where you're going, where is my cell phone? Right? Momentarily. Have any of you, like, lost your cell phone? Peter, you got to put your hand up. Thank you. There we go. I got to pick on him now that he picked on me. Have you ever, like, completely lost your cell phone? That happened to me about 5 years ago. I brought this chair up here so I could illustrate what happened. I was in my office. I was at the ministry center, and I had a meeting outside of my office. I went back in, and I must have had it in my pocket. And I'm sitting on a chair very similar to this one, and it fell out. Okay, you see how this chair is built? It landed right on that black part that joins the front to the bottom. Can you imagine that? It just sat right like that. It was a black camera or a cell phone, and it sat like that. And I could not, for the life of me, okay, there's a little bit of, like, spiritual pride about this in my life. Like, I don't lose things. Ask my wife. I was sure I had it in my office, and I looked high and low, and I could not find it for days. After about a week, I'm still not finding it. I finally just give up, right? Have you ever done that? You just get another phone, somebody's old phone. I start programming it in. I'm going, okay, I just lost my life on that last one. Didn't have a backup. And now I've got another one that I'm working with. And then about 2 weeks later, I sit down, or I go to pull my chair out, a little harder than usual. Didn't even do it. Dropped out on the floor. I'm like, yes! I can't believe this. My cell phone that was lost is now found. It's with me. And something of value, when it goes missing, you can experience that. There's a sense of loss. There's a sense, oh no. You find it, and it's rejoicing. I had to go and tell everyone, can you believe it? I'm up here telling you about this story. It sat right there. It was that lost. And it came back to me. Well, these stories that we're looking at this morning, and Peter's right, it's one of the greatest parables, I really think, in the Bible. And out of the teachings of Jesus, I love what Tim Keller writes about this story of what's lost and be found. If the teachings of Jesus could be compared to a lake, this might be one of those stories where you're in that spot in the lake where you can see clearly, most clearest down to the depths of who God is and also who we are and how God feels about us. And so I want to read that for you. There's a few things that go lost and are found, and the point is made. It's found in Luke chapter 15, verse 1 to 32. You can follow it up on the screen or in your Bible if you like. And it says, tax collectors and other notorious sinners often came to listen to Jesus teach. This made the Pharisees and the teachers of the religious law complain that he was associating with such sinful people, even eating with them. So Jesus told them this story. If a man has 100 sheep and one of them gets lost, what will he do? Won't he leave the 99 others in the wilderness and go to search for the one that is lost until he finds it? And when he has found it, he will joyfully carry it home on his shoulders. And when he arrives, he will call together his friends and his neighbors, saying, rejoice with me because I have found my lost sheep. In the same way, there is more joy in heaven over one lost sinner who repents and returns to God than over 99 others who are righteous and haven't strayed away. Or suppose a woman has 10 silver coins and loses one. Won't she light a lamp and sweep the entire house and search carefully until she finds it? And when she finds it, she will call out to her friends and neighbors and say, rejoice with me because I have found my lost coin. In the same way, there is joy in the presence of God's angels when even one sinner repents. To illustrate the point further, Jesus told them this story. A man had two sons, and the younger son told his father, I want my share in your estate now, before you die. So his father agreed to divide his wealth between his sons. A few days later, his young son packed all his belongings, moved to a distant land, and there he wasted all his money in wild living. About the time his money ran out, a great famine swept over the land, and he began to starve. He persuaded a local farmer to hire him, and the man sent him into his fields to feed the pigs. And the young man became so hungry that even the pods he was feeding the pigs looked good to him. But no one gave him anything. When he finally came to his senses, he said to himself, "At home, even the hired servants have food enough to spare. And here I am dying of hunger. I will go home to my father and say, 'Father, I have sinned against both heaven and you, and I am no longer worthy of being called your son. Please take me on as a hired servant.' So he returned home to his father. And while he was still a long way off, his father saw him coming. Filled with love and compassion, he ran to his son, embraced him, and kissed him. His son said to him, 'Father, I have sinned against both heaven and you, and I am no longer worthy of being called your son.' But his father said to the servants, 'Quick, bring the finest robe in the house and put it on him. Get a ring on his finger and sandals for his feet, and kill the calf we have been fattening. We must celebrate with a feast, for this son of mine was dead and has now returned to life. He was lost, but now he is found.' So the party began. Meanwhile, the older son was in the fields working. When he returned home, he heard music and dancing in the house, and he asked one of the servants what was going on. 'Your brother is back,' he was told, 'and your father has killed the fattened calf. We are celebrating because of his safe return.' The older brother was angry and wouldn't go in. His father came out and begged him, but he replied, 'All these years, I've slaved for you and never once refused to do a single thing you told me to do. And in all that time, you never gave me even one young goat for a feast with my friends. Yet when this son of yours comes back after squandering your money on prostitutes, you celebrate by killing the fattened calf.' His father said to him, 'Look, dear son, you have always stayed by me, and everything I have is yours. We had to celebrate this happy day, for your brother was dead and has come back to life. He was lost, but now he is found.'" You know, one of the overarching themes that we see in this story is a spirit of joy, a spirit of celebration. At the heart of God in relationship with us, in community with us, is one of a desire for us to experience his joy. The kind of joy that the Father experiences with the Son Jesus, with the Holy Spirit, is what God invites us to come into and experience. And he tells these stories so we can get just a little bit of a picture of what kind of a relationship God really wants with us. It's a powerful image. You know, to touch the guys and the men in the group, he tells a story about sheep. To touch the women, he talks about this coin. The sheep, there's 100 of them. You say, you know, that's a lot of sheep. One goes missing, just one. And the shepherd goes out, searches for that sheep, won't let that sheep just stay out in a dangerous, lost, lonely place, but finds that sheep, puts the sheep over his shoulders. Quite a picture, actually, if you think about it. How many sheep have that, shepherds have that kind of relationship with a shepherd? Walk home, and as soon as he gets home, he's saying, "Look at this," invites all his friends, "Have a party with me. I found my sheep." The lost sheep gets found. The woman with the coin. She had, they say that back then, the equivalent to a wedding ring was 10 coins that a woman would put together, and that would symbolize that she's married, and that it would be a headband with 10 coins on it. She loses one. And it's in this dark house. Many of the houses there didn't have that much windows and that sort of thing. So she puts on a lamp, and she searches high and low until she finds that coin. She's sure it's somewhere in the house, much like my cell phone was somewhere in my office. And she doesn't stop until she finds it. She's sure it's there, and she finds it. When she finds it, she throws a party. These would have been powerful images, powerful stories that Jesus was telling primarily to the religious people, to the very moral, good people who felt very smug in the fact that they were in with God. They must be found. They must be kind of the people who are in at home. And these people would have looked at it and go, "Wow, really? Jesus was actually saying that God searches for lost sinners. Jesus wanted them to get, I'm hanging out with these people, the people that you call sinners, tax collectors, notorious sinners. I'm with these people because they're coming home." You know, there's something about the people who know they have done wrong, that know that they need forgiveness, that are attracted to Jesus. And Jesus' arms were wide open to them. He didn't say, well, I'll wait, I'll eat with you if you get things cleaned up first. You know, there's some conditions here, people. He just went and enjoyed them. And the more that they were with them, the more those people seemed to flock towards him and find a place, find a home. They went, my goodness, you mean my life does have a purpose? That sheep now had a purpose. The coin had a purpose. My life has a purpose. I can be in relationship with God. He's welcoming me in. It's a powerful story. And for any of us who feel like we're kind of in that place and we might be forgotten by God, God wanted to communicate to both the sinners and the smug religious people. I search for people who are lost and know they're lost. Come home. And then it says, to illustrate the point further, he brings people into the mix. So he's talked about a sheep, he's talked about a coin. Now he brings two sons into the mix. Now, oftentimes this story is told as the parable of the lost son or the prodigal son. And I think maybe sometimes that second part of the story is left out, but it's a powerful piece because I really believe that there are two lost sons in the story. Both equally lost. One realizes it to the depths of his being. One of them really doesn't know he's lost. And that might be even more toxic and more dangerous. So you've heard the story and I read it for you, but this son comes to his father, says, you know what? I want now. He says, I'm tired of being cooped in. I'm tired of not being able to express myself. I'm tired of being kind of bound by all this relational community here, and I just want to go out and party. I want your things. I want your stuff, Dad, and I want it now. And back in that day, I think the inheritance and some of the pictures of that we get today, well, we see some of that in our modern day world, but it was even more powerful back then. Because land meant everything to people. If you had some land, if you had an estate, then you would pass it on to your kids. And generally, if you had two sons, the younger son would get a third, the older son would get two-thirds. And that would only happen after the father had passed away, because relationship was most important. This son was, in essence, saying, Dad, I wish you were dead. It was an incredible slap on the face. I want your stuff, and I want it now. And he takes it. And it says he goes as far away as he can, a far off land, moves away as far as he can from the father. He says, I don't want anything to do with you. There would have been a sense of shock in the audience of that day. What son would ever do this? And then there would have been a sense of shock. What father would actually sacrifice like that, at great expense to him, would sell off a third of his land and give it away to his son right away? That son, he deserves a beating. He deserves to be put away. But that's the kind of father of this younger son. Shows the incredible love of him. And so people would have been shocked at that point. And there's an obviously loving, reasonable father in the son saying, I don't value your relationship with me. Just give me your stuff so I can do what I please. So he goes out and you think about a Jewish boy ultimately coming so to the end of himself that he's working with pigs. Like, that's pretty powerful. He gets to a very, very low point. He's out of resources because of his self-indulgent, undisciplined, and foolish life. His friends that we thought were friends were just there for the party. They're long gone. He's lonely and he's by himself. His life has come to a complete collapse. But there's a phrase there that's important, and it's a phrase that really means what repentance is. It says he comes to his senses, and he goes, why would I live far off? I'll at least go and live near the Father. But I know I definitely don't deserve to be called a son again. I'll just ask to be a servant. So he comes back. He's got the speech that he's prepared. He's willing to come and to grovel, to suck up. And here's the Father, though, just waiting. It's an incredible picture of God. Just looking, searching, looking far off. And when he sees his son a far way away, it says that he starts to run towards him. Incredible picture again of God. See, back in those days, patriarchs, older fathers, they didn't run. Children might run, but older fathers, they wouldn't run. And he runs to him, gives him a big hug, welcomes him back in, says, let's get him clothed. This guy's a complete mess. And let's clean him up, and we will kill the fattened calf. We'll have a party for him. And the picture that God definitely wanted us to see in this story is that God is lavish in his forgiveness. That though we may be undeserving, and we all are undeserving, he's there to forgive us if we're willing to repent and willing to accept his forgiveness. God searches for lost people. It's an interesting picture. The sheep goes out because of the foolishness of the sheep. He's lost, and so the shepherd goes out. The carelessness, possibly, in the situation with the coin, she goes and searches. The willfulness of the son. It's like God says, you know what? You can have your free will. You can go and do your willfulness thing. But when you turn back to me and repent, I am there with open arms. I will interrupt any speech you may have and say, I just want to welcome you in. He offers us all forgiveness. Picture so much of one way of thinking. I want to throw off the constraints. I want to do my way. I want to live on my terms, the best way to live. And there's kind of two prevailing pictures of how life is best lived. And we may kind of fall into one camp or the other. But the one camp is self-expression. I want to do as I please. Who's going to tell me what to do? I can make up my own rules. There's that kind of group of people. And then that's the younger brother. And then there's a group of people that are much like the elder son. Oh, no, life is about conforming, doing what you're supposed to do, living to the rules that are there. Live a very good and moral life, and it'll all work out for you. Many of us much more fall into that camp. Maybe especially if we grow up in church, we go, you know what? If I live a good religious life, I can earn God's favor. And then there's a little appendage to that, and God will owe me something. God owes me if I do that. And you can see that kind of mindset going on with the elder brother, because he shows up. He's going, wait a second. There's a party for my younger brother who went and wasted all this money, just took resources and foolishly lived it for himself. He marches in and he gets the royal treatment. This son's just on the outside going, how does this work? What happened here? How did I miss this? And there's an anger and a resentment in him. As he's outside saying, this son of yours, he doesn't even call it his brother. There's no relation, no happiness or joy to see his brother again. He's just there saying, that brother went and wasted it on prostitutes, and now he's back in. This son of yours, look what he's done. And he stays outside of the party. There's no joy for him. You see, for this son, his thoughts of relationship with his father is really not about relationship. It's about, I get what I earn. I get what I deserve. And my goodness, I deserve a lot, because I've been sticking around at home, and I haven't even got a party done for me. And so you see the father coming outside of the home, and again, an incredible humility on the part of the father, coming outside of the home and saying, and actually pleading with his son. Now, again, many people in that society would have gone, well, for a father to step out and the indignity of the son not willing to come in, and he's going to talk to him and appeal to him and invite him in. An incredible picture of God. Incredible picture of God saying, come in, enjoy the party, enjoy the relationship. This is what it's about, is being in relationship, feasting with the Father, being in the presence of the Father, being in his joy. That wasn't part of the elder brother's thought. The elder brother's thought was, I'm sticking around because I want my dad's stuff. And it's interesting because really, there's not a lot of difference between the younger brother and the older brother. They both wanted the father's stuff. That's what it was about. But the one guy thought, well, I'm going to take it now and run. The other guy thought, well, I'll get it yet, but I'll go by the rules. And then the father owes me. It's an incredible picture oftentimes of the mindset that we can fall into with God. We can fall into this mindset where, like, God, I want you to do what I want you to do. And I'll do these things in order to get that from you. And our life can turn into duty It can turn into something that's very joyless. And it's very easy to fall into an elder brother kind of spirit. It's a very easy thing to start saying, you know what, my life is turning out fine because I follow the rules. I keep the commandments. I live a moral life. And something really ugly can start to happen within us, sort of a self-righteousness, sort of a judgmental spirit. All those other people, those younger brother types, look at what they're doing. And God is saying to us, you're just as lost. You're still outside of the party when that kind of spirit is there as this younger brother. He's saying, I want you to come and enjoy me for who I am, to enjoy goodness and truth and beauty for what truth and goodness and beauty is about. God's saying, I want you to celebrate with the elder brothers, to celebrate with the younger brothers, all of us coming together realizing that we're both prone to these two kinds of ways of thinking. And it isn't something halfway in between that God's inviting us to. He's inviting us to something completely other, completely different. He's inviting us to a place where all of us realize that we're lost, but we need to get found. Where all of us realize that we're broken and need his restoration in our lives. Where all of us are really just invited by God, come and follow me. Come and follow me, and you will enjoy the goodness of my presence. And that in itself is a blessing. Elizabeth Elliot writes this story. Some of you might recognize that name, but she's written some great stuff. And she talks about this sort of results-orientated sort of selfishness that can creep in when we think it's about us. You hear in this older brother, it's, look what I've done. Look at what I'm doing. And then we look towards this selfishness of getting what we can out of it, rather than a faithfulness born out of love. And she writes this story. You won't find it in the Bible, but it's like another parable. This is apocryphal. It's not in there. But she writes this story. She says, one day Jesus said to his disciples, I'd like you to carry a stone for me. He didn't give any explanation. So the disciples looked around for a stone to carry, and Peter, being the practical sort, sought out the smallest stone he could possibly find. After all, Jesus didn't give any regulations for weight and size. So he put it in his pocket. Jesus then said, follow me. He led them on a journey. About noontime, Jesus had everyone sit down. He waved his hands, and all the stones turned to bread. He said, now it's time for lunch. In a few seconds, Peter's lunch was over. When the lunch was done, Jesus told them to stand up. He said again, I'd like you to carry a stone for me. This time, Peter said, aha, now I get it. So he looked around and saw a small boulder. He hoisted it on his back, and it was painful, and it made him stagger. But he said, I can't wait for supper. Jesus then said, follow me. He led them on a journey with Peter barely being able to keep up. Around supper time, Jesus led them to the side of a river. He said, now everyone, throw your stones into the water. They did. Then he said, follow me, and began to walk. Peter and the others looked at him dumbfounded. Jesus sighed and said, don't you remember what I asked you to do? Who were you carrying the stone for? It's quite a picture of an attitude of servitude or real servanthood, of saying, God, I'm here to be your servant. Whatever you ask, and whether life turns out the way I expect or not, I'm going to follow you, and I trust you. The feast will be in your presence in a relationship with you. And the ultimate feast will be after this life is over. And I'm looking forward to that, God. I really am looking forward to that. Because frankly, many of us don't find that life turns out exactly like we hope. And there can be this sort of thing that starts to creep into our lives and say, God, you owe me. There can be a sort of a bit of a bitterness that can come in when we say, it's not turning out the way I thought. And God's just saying to us, come, follow me. When he invited the disciples to do that, he invites us to do that too. And towards the end of his life, when Jesus gave the ultimate self-sacrifice, he said, this is my body. It's broken for you. This is my blood. This is my life given for you. And he invites us to come in and to enjoy that together, to come and partake in that. And this morning, as we come and take part in communion, I want to invite all of us this morning, whether you found yourself living much like the younger brother, or you found yourself with that elder brother kind of spirit creeping in. He's saying, put aside your judgmentalism on both sides. Come in and enjoy the feast. God invites all of us, whether we're a younger brother or an elder brother, to recognize how lost we are without him and to come home to his unconditional love and enjoy his feast. He says, it's about the kind of love I have for you. It's not something you earn. It's something completely different than all religious philosophies. It's something that is given. It's something that I actually did for you. And that's why he gave us this visual picture of communion. It's a foretaste of the feast. It's an partaking in him and who he is. And for those, and you see it again and again throughout the Bible, those who got it at such a deep level. We don't have to read very far in the Psalms to see that David, and it says David was a man after God's own heart, because he understood the kind of feast that there is in God's presence. In Psalms chapter 63, verse 4 and 5, he says, I will praise you as long as I live, lifting up my hands to you in prayer. You satisfy me more than the richest feast. I will praise you with songs of joy. You know, it's quite a journey, quite a process for us to get there. Oftentimes our hearts kind of in their own willful kind of way are moving away from God or saying, God, you owe me. But when it comes to that place where you say, God, I just want you, regardless of whether my life turns out as I hope or think it should or not, I just want you. I want your presence. And God says, when that happens in your heart, and there's that kind of surrender, then something very deep and very profound happens within us. And we live just in a life of thankfulness. And then joy is, there's an openness for joy to come in. There's this thankfulness, God, I'm just so thankful for what you did, for the sacrifice of who you are. We get a picture of that father who sacrifices and gives his son, younger son, his portion. We see a picture of the father coming outside of the house to plead with the older father, with the older son. And we see an ultimate picture of a God who would give everything for us in his death and his resurrection. You know, again and again, and Kevin talked about it last week, the parables deal with feasts. It deals with us entering into a feast and whether we're willing to enter into that feast with God, to come into his presence and find his joy. There's a picture that Rembrandt painted about the prodigal son. And you see up there, there's the son with the father who's welcoming his son home. And it's very interesting because you can see there's a few people looking in the background. And I don't know whether there's an elder brother back there, or at least maybe there's a Pharisee or two or a religious person. And you wonder, will they experience that kind of love? It's really kind of, this parable leaves it very open-ended. The son's still outside the party. And the father's there welcoming in. I love the writings of Henry Nouwen who writes about this, and he says, he was a priest, a very profound teacher and writer. He says, for years I instructed students on the different aspects of the spiritual life, but one day I realized that I had never ever really dared to step into the center of the picture, kneel down, and let myself be held by a forgiving God. He says, I needed to move from a bystander to a participant, from a teacher about love to being loved as the beloved. And he writes, I didn't have an inkling about how difficult that journey would be and how much longer it would take to complete. You know, it's a journey for all of us to come into that place where we go, God, I'm so messed up, either in my willful walking away thinking that this prodigal, reckless life is the best, or I'm so lost in my own sense of my own pride and self-justification and judgmentalism, or maybe even my anxiousness. Am I living up to the standard that I have or not? And God invites us to step away from both and say, just come and enjoy me. Just be in my presence. And so this morning, as we take communion, I just want to invite all of us to do that this morning, to come and to enjoy that the presence of the Father. The price has been paid. We can't earn it. It's been done for us. It came a great sacrifice. Why would we want to willfully live far away from the Father when he loves us that much? And I want to invite the worship band to come up right now, if you would. And this morning, maybe as you come forward and receive communion, wherever your place might be this morning, in the younger brother place or the elder brother place, the invitation is to come home and to enjoy the Father's presence and his forgiveness. So I want to invite you to stand together, if you would. And if you'd like to take part in communion, we want to welcome you to do that. If it's completely voluntary, and I'd ask Peter if you would take one tray, and maybe Rob and Cheryl, you could take a tray as well. And if you want to take the cup, it's got, you'll end up taking two cups, and it's got the bread in the bottom and the juice on the top. And just hold on to it, and then we'll take it together.